Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
It's Film Week on KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us. Boy, are we looking forward to having you with us for our 19th annual Film Week Academy Awards preview. It's virtual this year. We're not able to go to what's been our home the past few years, Theater at Ace Hotel in downtown Los Angeles. Instead, we come to your home for this 19th annual edition. It'll be a virtual event. All you need to do is let us know you're coming. When you RSVP, we'll send you the link so that you can join us live on Sunday afternoon, April 18th, at 1 o'clock. It's exactly a week before the Academy Awards are given out. Again, it's Sunday, April 18th, 1 in the afternoon. 10 of our Film Week critics all taking part in what's going to be a wonderful event. We hear what our critics have to say about the Oscar nominations, just some wonderful films in this year's Oscar running, and we'll hear what our critics have to say about each of them. I'm so torn on these categories. It's going to be a real challenge to pick my favorite. I don't know about you. Joining me this week are critics Christy Lemire of RogerEbert.com and co-host of the Breakfast All Day podcast, and Andy Klein joining us. We begin with Thunder Force, an action comedy starring Melissa McCarthy, Octavia Spencer, and Jason Bateman. It's written and directed by Ben Falcone, who's Melissa McCarthy's husband. Andy, what'd you think of Thunder Force?
Oh, boy. I won't say it's terrible, but it is not very good. It's basically a comic book movie based on what could have been a decent premise, where Octavia Spencer and Melissa McCarthy are best friends as kids, and except that Octavia is a genius and Melissa McCarthy is basically playing the same role she frequently plays. She has no impulse control. She's not very bright. You know, she's just playing basically a screw up. Spencer grows up to be like the world's greatest scientist, and she's working on genetic modification. And of course, somehow, Melissa McCarthy gets into the lab and hits the wrong button and gets shot full of hormones that make her super strong. We get a training montage of her learning to develop her strength, which takes fully a half hour, which was way too long. This is not the 36th Chamber of Shaolin, believe me. This was a montage that could have lost 15 minutes at least. But basically they're there to fight another group of genetically modified villains called the Miscreants, who are committing crime all over town, though quite frankly they're committing kind of petty robberies and stuff. They don't seem like that big a deal, but they like to kill people along the way. And Octavia Spencer gets her own superpower through this genetic modification, which is that she can make herself invisible, which really doesn't sound like that great a superpower for what they're doing. And they go up against the Miscreants. The only thing that for me that really made this film pop at all was chemistry between Jason Bateman, who's sort of the good bad guy, and Melissa McCarthy, who had worked together previously in, Identity Crisis, Stolen Identity, whatever it was, where she took over his identity. And they're pretty good together, but geez, it gets so irritating that Melissa McCarthy is just such a screw up in this film.
Yeah.
And she's done that before. Ben Falcone, her husband, doesn't seem to have much flair. The one other plus in this film, sort of, is Bobby Cannavale playing the worst of the miscreants. And he's basically doing Al Pacino out of Dick Tracy. He's almost doing a straight out imitation of that portrayal. But this just does not snap, and it's not funny enough. And it's a shame, because I think Melissa McCarthy, if you just let her sit there and improvise, I've seen her do it on DVD extras, she's great.
All right, Thunder Force, Identity Thief is the what you were talking about, the film. Christy, what do you think of Thunder Force?
Why does Melissa McCarthy keep making movies with her husband? I mean, I get it. I understand they love each other. They want to work together. I love my husband, would very much enjoy working with him, but I'm not going to make terrible movies just to make that happen. And who keeps saying yes to letting them work together? If they have a whole deal with Netflix. Like 6 months ago, we got another one of these called Super Intelligence, in which she starred and Ben Falcone directed. And their output prior to this was like some of her worst stuff, like Tammy and The Boss. So yeah, everything that she is good at, it's like he tamps it down somehow. This is, as Andy was saying, just like a generically bland Melissa McCarthy archetype. She drinks a lot of beer. She says whatever's on her mind. Her primary character trait is that she loves all the Chicago teams and is talking about the Bulls and the Bears all the time. I don't see why Octavia Spencer is here. She does not need the work. She's wildly versatile and yes. talented. Maybe she and Melissa McCarthy are friends and they wanted to hang out. I don't know. Yeah, there's one scene with her and Jason Bateman, with Melissa McCarthy and Jason Bateman, where they have dinner together. That's kind of weirdly interesting. Like, it's amusing and dark and strange, and it gives you a hint as to where this might have gone if it had been allowed to go into its stranger instincts. But it's so safe and so predictable and so flat and so aggressively mediocre. It's even giving the energy to hate it seems wasteful.
All right. Thunder Force is the film, starring Melissa McCarthy, Octavia Spencer, and Jason Bateman, Ben Falcone, the writer director. It's on Netflix, rated PG-13. The European space film Voyagers stars Ty Sheridan and Lily Rose Depp. Finn Whitehead also in the cast with Colin Farrell. The film's written and directed by Neil Berger. Christy, what did you think of Voyagers?
This is essentially Lord of the Flies in space. It is sexy Lord of the Flies in space, because you have all these really attractive young men and women who have been bred in a lab to go into space to colonize another planet. It is the near future. Earth has become uninhabitable. There's disease, there's drought, there's climate change. We've got to find someplace else to live. They found a planet. We can get to it, but it's 86 years away. And so they've bred all these hot, sexy young astronauts to go into space and then to procreate in space. And then their grandkids will be the ones to do the work of setting up life on the new planet. Colin Farrell is the actual adult who goes along to chaperone them. He has sort of been like a father figure to them throughout their entire lives. And then a couple of the astronauts, played by Finn Whitehead and Ty Sheridan, discover that something is amiss, something is going on. They exploit it and learn to live by their true instincts. And everyone goes primal and tribal. And it is literally Lord of the Flies, down to the bad guy leading his own faction and saying, come with me, I will find food for us. I mean, it's not a pig. No one dances around in circles, but it's still, it's very, very similar. It's got a lot of style. Neil Berger also did Limitless, and he did the first Divergent film. So there's a lot of like visual panache and style. You feel like you are inside the ship, and it feels expansive at times and claustrophobic at others. But what he's trying to get to here in terms of like a nature versus nurture debate or ideas of free will and consent kind of scratch the surface. And it works better when it's just sort of a flashy kind of YA sci-fi thriller.
Voyagers, the film we're talking about. What do you think, Andy?
Christy pretty much nails it there. I'm going to be a little more explicit than she was about what goes on here, which is that they're being doped so that all of their libidinous impulses will be suppressed. And they find that out. and they start not taking the stuff that suppresses it, and that's what triggers them into being essentially savages. And they practically do dance around in circles. I mean, they act like apes. It's as though the notion of contraception never occurred to the people who put them in this situation. It also has slight implications, slight echoes of Forbidden Planet, in that there's this strange noise that happens on the ship that they think is an alien, which becomes the MacGuffin for all of the rebellion. We have to kill the alien, and maybe the alien is in one of us, all this stuff. And it doesn't start until after they start feeling their libidos. So it's kind of like the monsters from the id. I like Neil Berger, I like The Illusionist, but this has montages when they start discovering their inner impulses. It has montages that verge on self-parody. You know, it's like the boys start feeling their oats, and suddenly we see missiles launching and flowers budding up out of the ground, and you expect to see the Washington Monument. I mean, it was that blatant. Also, I have to, I suppose this is a Netflix standards and practices thing, but when two characters finally spend the night together, and it's clearly a love scene, and they wake up and they're still in their underwear. And I just thought, let's not go there. Did you actually put your underwear back on? So it's not dull. I give it that. But by the end of it, I kind of wish there was an alien that would show up and kill all of them.
Voyagers is the film written and directed by Neil Berger, starring Ty Sheridan, Lily Rose Depp, and Finn Whitehead. It's rated PG-13. The film is in wide release. I don't believe it is actually a Netflix film. This film is in a wide theatrical release, Voyagers. Honeydew stars Sawyer Spielberg, Malin Barr, and Barbara Kingsley. Devereaux Millburn is the director and co-screenwriter of the horror film Honeydew. Christy.
Oh, I dug this one. This one's really creepy and trippy and visceral. It is about a young couple played by Sawyer Spielberg, who is indeed son of Steven, and Malin Barr, and they're on a camping trip. And it's sort of the premise of so many horror movies that, some creepy guy approaches them while they're in their tent, and they find their car can't start, and then they have to go walk through the woods, and they find a nearby house, and this seemingly kindly but slightly odd older woman played by Barbara Kingsley takes them in and insists that they stay for a while, and I'll make you supper. And it's got a lot of Texas Chainsaw Massacre in terms of the details and the mood of what happens to them in the beginning. But as it evolves, it becomes like something out of an Ari Aster movie. You know, he did Hereditary and Midsommar, and there is such specific and strange and disturbing imagery here. It is so haunting. I mean, you will laugh just to sort of relieve the tension and the fear within you because it's so bizarre. But the house that they have stumbled into is not quite as seemingly sweet and charming as it appears on its surface. And they get sucked deeper and deeper in and begin to question what's real, what's a hallucination. They keep thinking they can leave and they keep not being able to leave. And it's really well acted. It's a great exercise in using this space and yet having the rooms and the corridors evolve all set in this one location. And you definitely feel the fear and the intensity going on here. Devereaux Millburn wrote and directed this. And it kept me guessing the whole way through. So really trippy. I dug it.
Honeydew is the horror film from Devereaux Millburn, making his feature directorial debut. Sawyer Spielberg, Steven Spielberg's son, starring with Malin Barr and Barbara Kingsley. It's unrated. It's available on on-demand platforms like iTunes and Fandango Now, and it's available on disc starting the middle of April. Also, just want to let you know that our Film Week Academy Award preview 19th annual program is virtual this year. It's next weekend, Sunday, April 18th, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. 10 of our Film Week critics all taking part. The major Oscar categories, we'll hear what they think for the best picture choice, but many other categories as well. Make your reservation to get the link for the at-home viewing event, kpcc.org/in-person. So good to have you with us on Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. Coming up in just a few minutes, our John Horn in conversation with the director of Operation Varsity Blues, the college admission scandal. Chris Smith is the director of that documentary, looking at that huge scandal, which of course was centered right here in Southern California. But right now I'm joined by film critics Christy Lemire and Andy Klein as we look at this week's new films, including the South African set Mafi, which stars Kai Luke Brumer, also Wynand Ferreira. The film is directed by Oliver Ermanis, who co-wrote the screenplay with Jack Seide. Christy, what did you think of Mafi?
I really loved it. This is the best movie of the week by far. It is about a young man in South Africa in 1981, and he is, like all young men at this age, required to go and serve in the army and train and go and protect the border with Angola. And so he has to go off and leave his family and get thrown into this incredibly brutal and toxic environment. You know, we see this a lot, certainly with movies about war, with movies about young men going off to the military and being verbally abused by their drill sergeant, having to deal with all the other guys and the sort of chest thumping and the proving of yourself that occurs when you are that age and you're off on your own in this sort of setting. But also he is gay and closeted. And the title is an Afrikaans slang word for a gay slur. And that is a word that gets used a lot in a very pejorative way to shame people who seem weak within this setting. And it's about this young man and how he connects with another young soldier, and it sparks this thing in him that he had been suppressing. And it's really beautifully shot and very tenderly acted, despite the intense male toxic masculinity going on here. There is quite a bit of Kubrick in some of the visual touches. There was one slow push into the shower area of the bathroom and their training area. And it is totally symmetrical and it's like something straight out of Full Metal Jacket. If you're going to borrow, it's a good place to borrow from, I suppose. But I really like this very much. It's quite moving.
The film is Mafi from South Africa. Oliver Ermanis, the director. Andy.
I am so much less enthused than Christy is about this. Yes, it's well made. Yes, it's nicely shot. But it's one of those films where I think, why would I want to experience this? It is a festival of toxic masculinity. Incredibly derivative of Full Metal Jacket, as Christy said. The drill sergeant here made Arlie Ermey in Full Metal Jacket look like the dad I always wanted to have. I mean, that's how nasty this guy is. And the difference between this and the approach that Kubrick took is that this is utterly humorless. I don't think there is a split second of relief from the just oppressive atmosphere. And, you know, I mean, there's enough toxic masculinity in the world. And this I just found it so unpleasant, even if it's well made.
Mafi, Christy, so you, this was your favorite film of the week.
It is quite powerful. And there's I think, a reason for hammering home the harshness of that reality, because this is such a contrast with what this young man is experiencing internally. I feel like humor would have seemed out of place tonally with the story that this filmmaker is trying to tell. It's based on an autobiography. So it's based on, you know, a real man's experiences. So I felt like that was of a piece with the story he was trying to tell, and it made absolute sense given how the ending turns out. I don't want to say any more, but the ending, it makes sense to me.
All right. Mafi is the film. It's unrated, from director Oliver Ermanis. Also out this week, the film from South Korea, Night in Paradise. The film is written and directed by Park Hoon-jung. It's unrated. Andy, what'd you think of Night in Paradise?
It's okay. First of all, the title couldn't be more misleading. This is not like a disco film. This is a very, very bloody gangster film. Park Hoon-jung basically made his bones by writing I Saw the Devil, which was a very good Korean film by Kim Ji-woon several years ago. This one is about a gangster who has to go on the lam from all the other gangsters in the universe. He goes to Jeju Island, which is apparently the largest island off Korea. And he's supposed to be taken to Russia, but meanwhile, the fact is that everybody is double-crossing everybody, and everything just goes belly up, and it is death and destruction and explicit violence in the extreme. Having said that, it's fairly entertaining. I think it could have lost about a half hour while it's setting up. It's very slow to get going before all the carnage starts. And as much as the carnage wasn't all that pleasant, I still, at least then, that was keeping my interest more.
Night in Paradise, unrated. It's streaming on Netflix. Looking for a Lady with Fangs and a Mustache. It's a Mexican film written and directed by Kensei Norbu. And the film stars Tareen Tashi Guofang and Tulku Kungzeng. Christy, tell us about this film, which is set in Nepal.
It's actually, maybe it's a Mexican production, but yeah, it takes place in Nepal. And they are speaking that language there. So it is about, it's a really bizarre title, first of all, but it's about a man living in Kathmandu who is sort of a modern man within this traditional setting. And he wants to open a coffee house, and he has all these dreams, these capitalistic dreams of making money and making a name for himself. But he keeps having these visions, and he goes to a monk, and the monk says, this is what this means. And you got to go to this other monk, and then you got to go to this llama, and they're all going to guide you to what's going to happen. And basically he's told that he's going to die in a week unless he finds this woman. And we don't know whether she's real or just a feminine spirit or just a picture on a wall. And it's really understated. It's like a low key farce as he searches for love and purpose and spirituality. And it's sort of a culture clash between like traditional Hinduism and his Western leaning dreams of wealth and success. And I can totally imagine this being remade in the United States in English and having the pace be snappy and having wacky things happen. But there's sort of a hypnotic element to the way this film exists now. And it's quite beautiful. And the director, Norbu, who will just hold a shot for a long time and just let you luxuriate in the setting, whether it's a peaceful, beautiful vista or a bustling street in Kathmandu. He'll just let you drink it all in. And he's very patient. And so you have to be as well in watching it. But I really liked it. And it is not in any way what I was even beginning to expect when I sat down to watch this.
Wow. Fascinating. Looking for a Lady with Fangs and a Mustache. The film is unrated. It's on Lemley's Virtual Cinema. The music documentary Dolly Parton, a Music Cares tribute, has one night in which Dolly is paid tribute to. It's part of the charitable arm of the Grammy Awards. And Laura Segura directed the music doc. Andy, what'd you think?
This has some good stuff in it, but first of all, it was shot over 2 years ago, and you get that sense that this has been sitting on the shelf waiting to fill in a slot because of the gap in production these days. It's a bunch of, I'd say, about 10 performances. The songs remind you how great Dolly Parton is. She comes up at the end and does one herself and does a spiel that's just hilarious, because she is a national treasure in all ways, and she delivers on that. The best stuff, I thought, was John Batiste and Mavis Staples do one tune, and Willie Nelson and Brandi Carlile do another. But essentially, it's a very by-the-numbers concert thing. You get to see Nancy Pelosi in the audience. I didn't see Matt Gaetz there, but that's to be expected.
Well, you said it's two years old. He had lower profile then. Dolly Parton, a Music Cares tribute. What did you think, Christy?
Yeah, there are some incredible performances. Like Yolanda Adams sings the hell out of I Will Always Love You, which is a song that is, of course, a Dolly song. But Whitney Houston made, you know, indelibly part of her persona, and she gets a standing ovation, and it's like the highlight of the whole thing. It begins with Miley Cyrus and Shawn Mendes doing Islands in the Stream. And it's funny to hear, as people are singing Dolly songs, how much do they have the tendency to like lean into doing their own Dolly imitation? And Miley Cyrus is for sure doing that. I liked when it was performers who are not necessarily country artists doing her songs. Like Norah Jones does one, and it's really beautiful and soulful and different. But the stuff in between is so awkward. It's like the stuff of like Simpsons parodies of bad variety hours. It's really awkward and stilted but seriously, folks, it's very, very cheesy. But if you are a fan of Dolly, and as Andy says, she's hilarious at the end, you will enjoy this.
Well, and what a collection of great artists. As you're listing off all the people and the great voices that are part of this, it sounds like the performances themselves, if not the interstitial, is worthwhile. Dolly Parton, a Music Cares tribute, music documentary. It's streaming on Netflix, rated PG. Laura Segura is the director. The horror mystery Held is directed by Chris Lofting and Travis Clough. Jill Aubrey is the screenwriter and the star of the film with Bart Johnson. Christy, tell us, please, about Held.
Basically, the moral of the story is don't go to an Airbnb.
Okay.
Because bad things always happen, right? Whenever you have a movie set in what seems like a fantastic rental cottage or a spacious mansion, like, it's not going to be good. There's going to be some kind of surveillance. Something horrible is going to happen. Like, when will people learn? Just don't do it. Just stay home. But what happens with this house, this really beautiful and very modern high-tech house, it's incredibly secluded. This husband and wife go there with the hope of working on their marriage, Jill Aubrey and Bart Johnson. And it's very awkward between them, you know, when they first get there. And in time, you realize that it is not at all what they initially thought it was. It is also a rape revenge thriller, as you see from the opening scene in a flashback, that this woman, when she was a teenager, was assaulted. And so everything that happens in the film is through the prism of that experience and how she takes back her own strength and her truth and her voice over the course of the film. It's got some kind of obvious and pedantic ideas about gender roles and relations that hopefully we are beyond at this point, but there are some twists and it kept me on my toes.
Held is the horror mystery starring Jill Aubrey, who wrote the screenplay, with Bart Johnson co-starring Chris Lofing and Travis Clough are the directors. It's unrated. You can see it at the Vineland Drive-In in the City of Industry, as well as on multiple on-demand platforms. Andy, we have just a short period here for a quick review of My True Fairy Tale, set in Florida, the film written and directed by the initial D. Mitry, and it stars Emma Kennedy and B.J. Mitchell. Andy, what'd you think of My True Fairy Tale?
I can do this in four sentences, including this one. There's a car accident. Teenagers are killed, but one of them goes missing. But mysteriously, she starts turning up in the lives of everybody she used to know all over the place and fixing their lives. And if you can't figure out what's going on, even from that much, you're not cooking on all cylinders. This is something that is so saccharine that the Hallmark Channel would have turned it down.
My True Fairy Tale is unrated, written and directed by D. Mitry. Those are our films for this week. But please stay tuned because coming up, our John Horn is going to talk with the director behind the documentary, which looked at the Southern California-centric Operation Varsity Blues, the college admissions scandal, which featured prominently at local universities, USC and UCLA, and the consultant at the center of it based in Newport Beach. Also, a reminder to join us Sunday of next weekend, April 18th, 1 in the afternoon, for our 19th annual Film Week Academy Awards preview. It comes to your house virtually, still a live event. Make your reservation, kpcc.org/in-person.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.